Topic, the president, Tom Shepard, joins us on the phone. Our 32nd annual, Tom, we're over half sold, so that's great. And the early bird is right around the corner here on October 24th, I believe. So you might as well get your tickets now and get in on the ground floor, right?
Yes, with only 12 days to go before the early bird, you definitely want to buy your tickets, because when you buy your tickets, you're in the early bird, and you're also in for all the other prizes. So it doesn't make any sense to wait. If you're going to buy anyway, you might as well buy now. And, you know, on October 24th, Michael, somebody's going to win a brand-new Cadillac in the early bird. And this is with the way our team is playing this year. I got 10 trips for two to all the events and the Grey Cup game in Edmonton this year.
Yeah, it would be nice if the Eskimos didn't make the playoffs and the Riders were there playing in the Grey Cup using the Eskimos dressing room. I hope that happens, because they did it to us 1 year here, 2000 and I believe it was 3, when they took the dressing room over at the old Mosaic Stadium on the Riders when we played the Alouettes. Okay, so talking about the lottery here now, once you get your ticket, you get in on the early bird, but you've kind of tweaked it too. You got a $250,000 cash prize, you got a $150,000 cash prize, you got a $50,000 cash prize, and speaking of cash, Tom, you got that cash calendar in December too.
Yeah, that's every day in December, we're going to draw for a prize. $2,000 every Monday, $15,000 on Christmas Day, and $1,000 on every other day in the month. And also, don't forget the 50-50, because that's going to be another $350,000 approximately, based on ticket sales. So buy your tickets now, be in the early bird, support your team, and do it now. Call 1-800-668-1999. Or go online, friendsoftheriders.com.
That's Tom Shepard, the guy who started this lottery and helping this football team out. So help yourself out, help your football team out. Thank you very much, Tom.
Thanks, Bozy.
And good afternoon, everybody, and thanks for making us part of your game day. This is Rough Rider Game Day, brought to you by KFC and Waxy's Bobcat across the Rough Riders Radio Network. And I'm Michael Ball, joined by Taylor Shire from Global Sports, and we'll hear from him as the program progresses, as the Saskatchewan Rough Riders on the road to take on the Calgary Stampeders in their last road regular season game of the season. The Rough Riders, of course, coming off a humiliating 31-0 loss to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers last week at Investors Group Field. Now, the Rough Riders, with a win in their last two games, will be assured a home playoff game, but they do have an outside chance at first in the CFL West, but the permutations are too much to get into right now. Just win a football game and you have a home playoff game, and that's what's on the Riders' mind today as they try to rebound from that loss last week. Coming up on Rough Rider Game Day, we got a jam-packed show. We'll hear from Coach Chris Jones. In our Where Are They Now segment, Corey Sheet stops by. We'll get to know the newest Saskatchewan Rough Rider, I guess the newest guy practicing with the Rough Riders, Dakota Shepley out of UBC. We're going to hear from Darian Durant and Luke Mulliner. Mulliner live from McMahon Stadium and Darian live from his home in Atlanta. Also, we're going to hear from Paul Waldo in Growing the Game as he is on the road right now with the U of S Huskies taking on the Manitoba Bisons, as he's the coach with the Huskies. And we have our Moving the Chain segment, not with Nick Lewis, but with Taylor Shire, because Nick is being honored by his university, Southern Arkansas State, down south. This is Rough Rider Game Day, brought to you by KFC and Waxy's Bobcat on the Riders Radio Network. And just before we get going here, I want to remind you that the early bird deadline for the Friends of the Riders Touchdown Lottery is Wednesday at midnight. You heard the interview before the show with Tom Shepard. So if you want to get in on all the prizes, and why wouldn't you if you plan to buy a ticket anyway, get your tickets 1-800-668-1999, friendsoftheriders.com, or head down this week before Wednesday to the Rider ticket office and pick up your tickets in person. Yes, I'm joined here in studio across the Rough Riders Radio Network by Taylor Shire of Global Sports here in Regina. Thanks for stopping by, my friend. I appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, now, so how's fatherhood?
It's good.
Yeah?
She's 11 days old now and basically doing all the things a newborn's doing, right?
Crapping, eating, and sleeping.
That's about it.
That's kind of, wouldn't that be a great life?
Yeah.
That's all you
and
get.
She seems pretty content. A little cry. Okay. Yeah, that's good. Fix this.
That's good. How's mom doing?
She's good. Mom's a trooper. So,
good.
So far, so good.
And are you good at changing diapers yet?
Yeah, I've learned.
Yeah. Did you practice before?
No, I've observed with my nephews, but until you kind of roll your sleeves and do it yourself, you don't really know what you're doing.
Remember the first time I changed my son Ethan, who is on his way actually to watch a Huskies game today, oddly enough. He took my car today. Man, how they grow up fast, Taylor. Anyway, I remember the first time I changed him, I put him on the vanity in the bathroom and I took off his diaper and then a little fountain came up and I tipped him off to the side because he was peeing on me and he peed into the shaving outlet and short-circuited it. So that was my first foray. What's your daughter's name?
Her name is Willa.
That's a great name. Where'd you come up with that name?
Just a name we liked.
You know? They always say the hotter the parents are, the wackier the name or the most, the not wacky name, but the different kind of name you can pick. So there you go. You and your wife, hot parents, you pick a celebrity parent.
Thanks, Ballsy.
Okay. So let's talk about this football team. Mm-hmm. First, let's get your thoughts on what you saw last week before, you know, that was atrocious.
It was bad. It was, I think you called it embarrassing, whatever kind of words you want to use. It was bad. The offense just wasn't clicking and the defense was giving up explosions, as they like to call them. Yeah. I mean, bend but don't break. They were completely snapping in half, and the offense wasn't helping them out.
Yeah.
It was bad, and the offense didn't do anything to get them back into the game. They continued to do those little dump short passes when they were down 31 points.
Now, this football team has had some off-field issues. I think it was before this season, Justin Cox in the offseason, and he's still having some issues, so he's not part of the team. Then Jerome Messam, early in the season, gets jettisoned because of some legal problems. Now, both of those legal problems had to do with women. Mm-hmm. This was, of course, Charleston Hughes allegedly passed out behind the wheel of his vehicle and refused a breathalyzer. Your thoughts on him not playing today?
Well, it's interesting because it was Thursday, Chris Jones said, yeah, he will play. He just, you know, said, yes, he'll play. Yeah. And then on Friday, a news release came out from the Riders. They issued a statement saying he will not play after they reviewed. They basically did an internal thorough review, is what they said. So Craig Reynolds probably was involved, and Chris Jones and some of the other staff. I like the move, but I think they could have handled it a bit better and got ahead of it.
Yeah,
and kind of prevented the release from being sent out, or kind of handled it when they first found out.
It looked reactionary, and I'm not blaming anybody per se, but I think Craig Reynolds doesn't like to get involved in the football side too much, right? I'm not saying he doesn't, but I think he likes to keep it at arm's length, let them do what they do, and I'll do what I do up here. But I think in that case, Craig maybe needs to step in and say, hey, this is what we're doing. Yeah. I know you want to play him, but we have, like, you know, we have the SGI ads in the stadium with their major sponsor. We need to step in and make it look, you know, we have to look like we're being proactive here instead of reactionary like that.
Yeah, and I think it sets the precedent for other not even people on this team, but kind of around the league.
Yeah.
Hey, if you do this in season, you're going to be missing a game, and you're going to be fined the maximum amount, whatever that is.
Yeah.
I mean, these players don't get paid a ton, and whatever this maximum fine, it probably hits them a little bit. So it sets a precedent for other players within the Riders system across the league, even looking, you know, if other teams want to look, and here's an example of what happened, don't do this. And I mean, the guy made a mistake. And he
shouldn't be fired.
He was embarrassed by it.
Yeah.
He's got to learn from it. It's the first time that it's happened, we believe. So, I mean, you can't just throw a guy to the curb after one bad mistake.
No, you can't. And you know, but when you look at this from a football standpoint, I don't know that it's necessarily a bad thing. Like you said, they should have got out in front of it earlier. But in terms of football, you get to have a 34-year-old guy have a week's rest before. Like, let's face it, you got to win one of the next two to have a home playoff game. And I, you know, we'll get into the picks as the show goes on. But I kind of was eyeing that BC Lion game as the one that would put the Riders over the top, finish 11-7, have a home playoff game. So if you have a rested, motivated Charleston Hughes for that last game, it can't. You know, it's good to have get him a bit of rest.
Yeah, I don't know how much that played into it, but I'm certain. I mean,
it can't hurt.
It can't hurt the guy. If they want to get first place,
they
have a really, really outside chance of actually catching Calgary. They need to win out and have Calgary lose out. So this game matters in terms of that, but realistically, second place is probably the goal at this point because you're basically scoreboard watching in the last 2 weeks, hoping that Calgary loses. Calgary has a tough schedule, so they very well could, but sitting an older guy, not that big of an issue.
Yeah.
You know,
and you got an embarrassment of riches on defense, right? I mean, you could use Antigua, you can use Chad Jeter, you got different guys you can use, right? So, I mean that's a positive.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. As a guy that goes to practice almost every day and watches this team, are you really confident that this offense can get it turned around? It's hard to flip a switch, and especially as we go into the toughest part of the season, the playoffs.
I'm not sure. But the good thing for them is that their defense can win them games. And they just need their offense to kind of, you know, put up 200 yards and not turn the ball over. They don't need them to score a ton of points. They just need them to, you know, get in field goal range. They have a good field goal kicker.
Yes.
They don't need touchdowns. I mean, it'd be awesome to if they threw for 500 yards and four touchdowns. And
do you really? Do you
the want, offense won the game. Yeah. I don't think they have the personnel in place to do that. They have a lot of young receivers. They're talented, but they're just not quite.
They're learning.
They're learning still. And you look at last year, they led the league in touchdown passes with Kevin Glenn at quarterback because that was how good their receivers were, I think. Kevin Glenn put the ball in the right spot.
You're right.
Zach Kolaros is putting the ball, for the most part, in the right spots. Number of drops. Kenny Shaw had a couple of drops last week. Yeah. Kyron Moore with a couple of drops. These guys are skilled, but they're still learning, and they're still picking up the game.
Yeah, and I agree with what you're saying there, but having said that, you're right. They don't need to go and score 40 points a game. But if they could just put two touchdowns on the board and a field goal or two, they'd probably win the games. But I'm not even confident they can do that. I mean, they're not, like, they don't scare you, and it's because they got young guys that are just learning. It's I don't know. I'm just, and the play calling too. What do you make of the play calling?
That second and long when they go just for the 2 yard dump pass.
Yeah.
Oh man. And that's the only option. They don't go with riding to side play. The fact that you're banking on him getting 8 yards after the catch,
yeah,
it's not going to work every time. And it might not even work 25% of the time.
That's right.
You got to be able to throw your 10 yard curl routes or 10 yard outs, hit that one pass, have two looks,
yeah,
and make that play. They're just banking on these getting one block and then another block and hopefully gaining 10 yards off these second and long plays.
You know, we talk about at playoff time, it's the teams that are the hottest and the healthiest. And we'll get into that as the show moves along. But the Riders were really hit hard on the offensive line here recently, and we'll get into that. But right now we're going to hear from Coach Chris Jones as when this whole Charleston Hughes thing came down, we caught up with him, Taylor involved in, as well, as we had our weekly scrum with Chris Jones. This is the Rider Rewind here on the Rider Radio Network.
Well, Chris, we all know what happened with Charleston Hughes. Do you have a statement or state this?
Well, I mean, first of all, as an organization and me personally, I mean, it's an unfortunate event. It's something that we take very seriously, and Charleston knows the situation and the magnitude of it. And again, it's something that we're still gathering information on at this time.
Drunk driving is a huge issue in this province. Is there something, I mean?
Well, it's not just this province.
Yeah.
It's not just this province. I mean, drunk driving is a serious offense regardless of where you go. And again, just like I said a second ago, I mean, we as an organization, we take it very seriously, and we're gathering information as we go.
Has any support been offered to Charleston Hughes?
Excuse me?
Process? Have you offered any support, or the organization offered any support to Charleston?
Well, I mean, process? Again, I've spoken with Charleston, and he and I have met a couple of times on it, and we'll continue to do so over the next while. Again, there's not a league code of conduct, in place or anything like that regarding these matters. And so this is an individual, we will handle it as an individual event like we do all of our football team. And again, it's an unfortunate event that certainly we're taking very seriously.
What kind of repercussions do you hand a player that's...
Well, I mean, again, it's not like we face this every day, right? So, different people have handled it in different ways, and again, we're gathering the information as we go.
Was there a question of if he'll play going forward?
You know what? We'll cross that bridge when we get there, right? When we've got all the information.
How does he accept the news? What was his reaction to it?
Yeah, well, I'll let you speak to him. I don't want to put words in his mouth. I'll let him speak to you guys.
Did you come to this attention yesterday, or did you know about it?
It was yesterday, right? Got all the information, or the information that I do have.
On marijuana legalization day, is that a conversation you have to have with the team?
Yeah, we talked about it this morning again. I mean, marijuana is legal, but, you know, as a professional football player, cigarettes have been illegal for, 100 years, but you wouldn't go smoke, two-pack cigarette prior to the practice. You know, alcohol has been illegal for however many years, since the 30s, and you wouldn't, you know. So, I mean, we, it's one of those things where, you know, people are going to do what they do, and we certainly hope that, you know, our guys use discretion, and, again, because there's no difference in, you know, if you're impaired, you're impaired regardless of whether it's smoking marijuana, whether it's legal or not. I mean, if you're impaired driving. So we talked about it this morning. We've got young men, and, you know, they're faced with a lot of things, and we hope that they make the right decisions.
Do you think there could be some medicinal and positive repercussions by using marijuana as athletes?
What is it?
Some positive, you know, and
I don't know. I mean, you'll have to ask our trainers on all that. I mean, I'm not a doctor.
Are you concerned about the message that gets sent to the Rider Nation that one of its own players can get caught from impaired driving, and maybe the message and the actions of impaired driving?
Well, you know what? I mean, you know, Charleston's human, and he made a huge mistake, and it's one of those things, like I say, I mean, where we're not, we certainly don't condone it. We think of the offense very seriously, and, you know, it's one of those things where it's tough to gauge exactly as an individual. I mean, we're certainly not going to just throw out one of our own, but at the same time, he's got to understand that it's a very serious offense, and everybody on our football team, in our administration and our coaching staff and our ticket office and everybody else everybody else has to be the same way. You know, we look at it very seriously, and it's an unfortunate event, and it's one of those things where you don't have to deal with it every day, so you don't know exactly what to say, and but you know that where you stand on it, and as an organization, we've got to make sure that we gather all the info on it before we act on it.
And this is Where Are They Now? And we're speaking with the Grey Cup MVP of the 2013 Grey Cup, number one in our hearts, Corey Sheets. How are you today, Mr. Sheets?
Hey, how you doing, man? I'm good. Hey, Ryderville.
Hey, so, Corey, I remember the first time I saw you out of football clothes, so to speak, out of your uniform. I was at the Mahan Arena in East Regina, and I'm watching you learn how to skate. It's the off season of 2012 going into 2013, a year we're going to host the Grey Cup. You're coming off a 1,200-yard rushing performance the year before, and you're learning how to skate by stopping into the boards. I'm like, what is our all-star running back doing learning how to skate? Who's teaching you how to skate, first off?
Nobody really taught me how to skate. It was always something that I wanted to do, but growing up in Connecticut, it wasn't too many options for that, so I stuck to football. But when I got the chance to finally do it, I took the opportunity to learn. But I was always a great skater, like an inline skater,
yep.
Like rollerblades.
Yeah.
But so I felt like I'd be a natural at it.
So do you? Did you get a new appreciation for it? Did you find you weren't a natural at it? How did that skating come along as you went along?
What you was watching me do was practice how to stop. So I figured if I learned how to stop close to the board, it wouldn't be so bad as when I hit it for real.
did you ever figure out how to stop without the boards, Corey?
I got kind of good at it, but I wasn't great. I still need some more work, to be honest with you.
Did you play on the Rough Riders? They had a hockey team that played in the off season some games for charity. Did you ever suit up?
Yeah, I played in both of those games.
And how'd you do?
As expected, I was running around like a chicken with my head bit off. I had fun.
Corey, you describe your 2 years in Saskatchewan, 2012, 2013. As the two best years of your football life, maybe two of the best years of your life. Why is that?
Because I was up there playing football, and it was great. Like, all I really did was like back then in college, only you got paid above the table.
Yeah, no kidding. What did you like best about being in Regina and Saskatchewan, besides the football part?
The city really makes you, not even the city, the province really makes you feel at home, and Ryderville is crazy. No matter what part of Canada or the country or the world you're in, there, support you, love you, talk to you, have fun with you, buy you drinks, drink with you, everything.
Hey, what did you like best about our game when you came up here, Corey?
Bring them out, running onto the field every game day. I really miss that.
Yeah, what was that like to be in the tunnel as the fans are chanting and the crowd is getting electric? That's a feeling you can't recreate, right?
Oh no, not at all. People always wonder why I kept my helmet off when we ran out the tunnel and everybody else had theirs on. And joking around, I told somebody, like, shoot, don't nobody know what we look like, so I want anybody to see my face.
Okay, so take me to the 2013 Grey Cup. Everybody wants to talk about that. That's the second best rushing performance in a professional championship game in North America. Timmy Smith has the most yards in an NFL Super Bowl, and I believe it was 1988 with the Washington Redskins, 204 yards. You got the next best total in a North American professional football game in a championship game. That's 197-yard performance against the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Did you feel when you walked to the got to the stadium that day that it was going to be a different kind of day for Corey Sheets, a special day?
I didn't know it was going to be that special. I knew that we were going to run the ball a lot, but I didn't know it was going to take off as well as it did. Plus, Darian losing that ball really helped out a lot.
All right, Corey, you're talking about that 2013 Grey Cup, man, and it really, a couple of plays stick out of my mind. The first one is Darian Durant fumbling the ball. It seemed like it hung up there for an eternity. And, you know, if Hamilton gets that ball, maybe it's a different tone early on in the game and the game goes in a different direction. But you get that ball and run down the field. Take me through that play, Corey Sheets.
During the play, after I made my block, I kind of really felt that I was going to lose the block and Darian was going to get tackled anyway. So I was kind of screaming at him, trying to tell him to pitch it to me like he did early in the game and during the season. So he didn't do that, but then he got hit, and the ball popped up, and I knew that I was the only one around. And once I caught that ball and seen it was open field, it was like, man, I got to get busy and I got to go.
Okay, the other play I remember, Corey Sheets, in that football game, it's later in the game. Hamilton's got some of the momentum, and it's second down, I believe, in 19 in our own territory, deep in our own territory, and you get a draw play and bust it off the left side near the Hamilton bench. Just take me through that play. That may have been your best run in your career as a Rough Rider.
Man, honestly, we didn't even want to run that play. The situation being what it was, second and 19, you call a draw, like, come on now. But when the call came in, everybody in the huddle said, what? And Darian looked at me and was like, man, just make it work. The rest is history.
Yeah, the rest was history, and you won the Grey Cup MVP. Where does that sit in your football career, being named the Grey Cup MVP? That's one of the greatest performances in Saskatchewan Rough Rider history.
Honestly, it was crazy. I wish I had ran one more play and rushed for 200. But after they told me I had the record, I was like, oh, well, let Husey run. This is the last time you're going to be able to probably get a chance to do this. So, mm-hmm. And he went and tore it up.
Hey, Corey, if you could, that's a good question now to ask you. If you could relive one play or one game in your Rider career, what play or game would you rerun if you could do it? If you could do one more play?
I would go out and do one more play and go get 200-plus yards and then come off the field.
and have the all-time record in both the NFL and the CFL. Yeah, that would be that'd be cool. Who did you celebrate with that day? Did you have any friends or family in for that day when you guys won the Grey Cup here?
My mother, my father, my brother, and my girlfriend.
Who was the biggest influence growing up for you, maybe away from the football field, as you started in this sport?
My mother, she always kept me in the right path, always kept me focused, and basically gave me real options. One day I actually wanted to quit football, and she was like, well, if you quit football, you know you got to get a regular job, right? I thought about it, and I was like, yeah, let me go ahead and try this football thing again.
It's hard to believe, though, Corey, that was your – That was your last real game of football. I know you had preseason action with the Oakland Raiders and hurt your Achilles for the second time in your career. Hard to believe that day when you walked onto the turf, that would be your last real meaningful game of football.
Yeah, if I had known that, I probably would have stayed out there a lot longer than I did.
You know, I was gonna ask you, do you have any regrets?
Probably not enjoying it as much as I should have. I had a great time, don't get me wrong, but I really was like, at first when I first got out there, I was kind of closed off to the city just because I was upset being in the middle of nowhere, mm-hmm. and it was cold, and it was June.
Yeah.
So, once I adjusted to the city, I wish I had opened up and experienced it a lot sooner than I did.
Do you wish you would have stayed in the CFL instead of trying the NFL? Now, I know as an American kid, you always want to play in the NFL, and you had bounced around with the 49ers and the Dolphins, and then you get that offer from the Raiders. But in hindsight, and hindsight's always 20/20, do you wish you would have stayed here and maybe closed out your career and been kind of a big fish in a small pond, so to speak?
Not necessarily saying that I wish I had stayed there and closed up my career, but I do wish I had came back and tried for the repeat.
Yeah.
That's one thing me and the guys talk about. It was like once I left and Dressler left, but he came back, it was like it was still one thing missing, and it was me. So it wasn't the same. I wish I could have came back to try and repeat. That would have been epic.
Now, before I ask you what you're doing now, do you have a piece of advice for a young athlete listening to this interview as they try to go down their path in the world of sports and in the world of football?
Learn who you are during the offseason. That's the most important part in training and all of that stuff, and to get to figure out what are we going to do once football is over.
Yeah, you kind of get consumed by the sport. Yeah. You wish you did. You
yeah.
So you really didn't develop another passion when you were playing? Is that what you're getting at, maybe?
Yeah, because football ended so abruptly for me. And it was like, one day you're a pro athlete, and then the next day you got to find a job. Like, it was no warning. It was just done. And it took me a while before I figured out what I was going to be doing.
Yeah, I guess a lot of guys feel like they're going to be young forever and be able to take the hits and run down the field, and you never know, especially in this violent, brutal sport. It can change on a dime, right?
Yeah, that, and you think you're going to get the big bucks fast, and it don't always happen like that.
Yeah. Hey, Corey Sheets, the name of this segment is Where Are They Now? What are you doing? Where are you now, and what are you doing nowadays?
I'm actually headed down to Miami to hang out with Anthony Allen. But what I'm doing nowadays is I'm getting ready to move to Connecticut, which is where I'm from, mm-hmm. to start a trucking company. Mm-hmm. I've been working with trucks this past year, and I really enjoy it, so I'm going to start my own company.
Excellent. And lastly, did you get your Corey Sheets bobblehead they were handing out there the other day?
Oh, yeah. I got a whole bunch of them. I signed a few of them and sent them back to the guy that made them, so they should be, some of those might be floating around now and again.
Yeah, and then
I'm actually trying to come up to a game this season.
Well, you should, because the Riders are poised for a playoff run. I know Corey Sheets would love to run out of the new tunnel here at Mosaic Stadium for sure. Have you seen the stadium on TV?
Once. A year ago, I watched the game on TV. But I haven't seen any this season.
All right, Corey, thanks for this. We appreciate it, and we hope to see you in the stadium sometime. And if you do pop up, make sure you stop by and say hi, okay?
I will do.
Here with Riders offensive lineman Dakota Shepley in our profiles feature. Well, Dakota, in Saskatchewan colors, jet colors aren't much different. How have you found the transition so far?
I mean, football is football, right? Yeah. That's what I've been telling everybody. I mean, I'm here to play football. That's what I've been doing. I've been, you know, obviously different playbooks. So I've been learning the plays, learning from, you know, the other guys that have been helping me out. And, you know, I'm just taking it as it comes.
Which veterans kind of put you under his wing?
Well, I actually sit next to Josiah St. John in the offensive line room. So whenever questions come up, I ask him, and he's kind of helped me out along the way.
Of course, you're used to three-down football playing for UBC, so the actual game isn't that much of a transition, but how have you found it? You know, you were training to be an American football player, and now coming right back, thrown into the fire here.
You know, it's kind of interesting because I go to New York for 5 or 6 months or whatever it was, and you train to not be patient, get the hands on right away because of the no yard on the line of scrimmage, and then you get here, and I was actually just talking about it with the coach, and then you get here, and, you know, you got to relearn the Canadian game. So, I mean, it's a bit of an adjustment, but it's nothing I'm not used to.
Talk about, you know, people that don't play line, that yard, how much of a difference it does make, and a guy can make a move in a yard.
Well, you know, when people talk about the American game being so much quicker, I think that's the biggest difference right there, because you're getting your hands on them right away in the States, whereas in Canada, you know, basically the D-linemen have a running start, and you got to be a little more patient, but expect a little more of momentum coming from a 300-pound body. So, I mean, it's an adjustment, but one I'm willing to make.
Saw the exploits online with you curling all that weight, man. How long you been lifting weights for?
Honestly, I started in high school when I started playing football, so I guess about the 11th grade. 2011, established, yeah, there you go. Yeah,
okay, so you started playing football in grade 11, is that right?
Seriously started playing in grade 11, yeah. That's when I stopped playing hockey.
And so what got you, what made you pick football over hockey?
Well, I ended up breaking my hand fighting in hockey in grade 10, and the surgeon I had to go see to, you know, see my hand or whatever, questioned why I wasn't playing football and kind of convinced my mom that it was a good idea for me to switch.
And always been a lineman?
Always been an offensive lineman, yeah. I played a little bit of D-line in high school, but yeah, pretty much stayed the same.
What's your favorite part about being an offensive lineman?
I like the mind games part of it. I mean, if you can manipulate a dude before the snap, that's the best feeling in the world. You win pre-snap, and then the rest takes care of itself.
Yeah. Who's had the biggest influence in your career on you to this point?
Football-wise or life-wise?
Just in general. Maybe life-wise and football-wise.
Interesting. I mean, it's got to be, you know, one of my high school coaches who initially got me into football, tried recruiting me in grade 9 and grade 10, told me that if I get a good hit on a guy, I'll get a pat on the head rather than a two-minute penalty. So maybe someone who helped me transition into football, like my coach Racy or Coach McIntyre back in Ontario.
Okay. And what do you like to do away from the football field, Dakota?
I'm actually a drummer, so I've been drumming since I was 3 years old. My dad's a guitar player, so I think he bought me a drum set so he had someone to jam with when I grew up, and that's exactly what happened. So I drum in my free time. Yeah, I'm a little bit of a musician.
Have you been in a band?
I was actually in a band for about 6 years, all of high school, and then a little bit of my first year of university, but I mean, I went all the way to BC, so I couldn't really commit to a band in college football and school, so I kind of gave that up, but I still jam with, you know, they're all my best friends in that band. They're still a band today, and yeah, we jam when we can.
What was the band name?
We were called State of Us, and the band's called Hutch now, with two T's, and they're actually doing pretty well for themselves, so maybe it was a good thing I don't play for them anymore.
So what's your genre, rock, or what is it?
I would say it's When I was in the band, it was pretty hard rock, and now they're like an indie Canadian rock band, if you can imagine something like The Hip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite drummer of all time?
I mean, a sane Canadian would say Neil Peart, right?
Right.
Yeah, so I guess I'll go with Neil Peart for the sake of being Canadian.
That's awesome. Okay, yeah. So if you had to go to, what's one concert you haven't been to yet that you want to go see?
One concert? See, I thought you were going to ask me what concert I liked, and I've seen Rush, Van Halen, and Kiss was actually my first concert, so I think I've covered all the bases of bands to see it before I die, and the Foo Fighters. You know what? I'm happy where I'm at right now, and I think if a band comes up, then I'll try and get some tickets.
Van Halen's my favorite. Are you Roth or are you Hagar?
Hagar. Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta go. I love you. Yeah,
he writes great, and you know, he's got a heck of a voice, and he's had a few other side projects that I was really into as well.
Chicken Foot, with Chad Smith from the Chili's and Satriani.
Yeah, that's a killer band.
So what's your favorite Van Halen song?
I like Human Being and Everybody Wants Some, by far my favorite.
You know what? You've become my favorite Rough Rider.
Hey, there you go.
Thanks, buddy.
I appreciate it.
Dakota Shepley and our profiles feature here on the Rough Rider Radio Network, brought to you by KFC and Waxy's Bobcat. The KFC new triple grab-and-go packs, 3 buckets of finger-licking goodness in one easy-to-carry package. pick it up today, but only for a limited time. And Waxy's Bobcat Pool Spas and Landscaping. See them at 1600 Ottawa Street or online at waxysbobcat.com. A reminder, the Friends of the Riders Touchdown Lottery, the early bird deadline is October the 24th. That's next Wednesday at midnight, so get your tickets there. That's some additional prizes, including a 2018 Cadillac. Got some TVs and such in that early bird draw. So make sure you get your tickets. 1-800-668-1999. Friendsoftheriders.com. Or you can go down to the ticket office and pick them up in person. All right, joined back in studio with Michael Ball. It's Taylor Shire here from Global Sports. And let's talk Riders offensive line. Now, Dakota Shepley seems like a good dude.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that went to camp with the Jets. Didn't know if the Riders get a crack at him, but he's back here. But he's not officially a Rider yet. There's mm-hmm. a loophole. He's practicing with the team, but if another team comes and offers him something in terms of the NFL, he's going to look at that avenue.
Yeah, he's on the practice roster right now, and I imagine he's going to finish out the season. They'll probably have to offer him a contract to stay with the team for the rest of the season, but I imagine he's going to stay with the Riders.
Is it like a five-day window?
I believe it's a five-day window. Yeah. There's kind of a loophole. It's kind of a rule that,
yeah,
like a lot of the CFL rules, we don't know about.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a nice guy, and he was kind of observing on day one of practice, just kind of getting the lay of the land. But then they did one-on-ones after, and man, oh man, he was like laying out defensive line.
Yeah, he's a big dude.
He was definitely holding his own in the one-on-ones. And I imagine he was a little jacked up. Chris Jones was watching.
Yeah.
And you know, he's trying to get his first impression to the coaches. But yeah, he's says all the right things and
gonna be a weapon. And definitely when you look at the Rough Riders offensive line, they're getting long in the tooth in some areas. Dan Clark's a guy that's been on and off the roster with injuries this year. And of course, you know, we're talking about MVPs of this team. Brendan Labatt has got to be right up there, Taylor Shire. Like, you look at it.
The offensive MVP?
Hear me out.
Well, who else?
I know you're snickering, but you check this out. This guy gutted through two big-time injuries in games where you thought, well, he's not coming back. He walks down the tunnel and Hamilton comes back. They win both those games. If they don't win those games, they're maybe not in the playoffs this year. That's how tight it's been in the West. I mean, that can't go unnoticed.
I would say arguably he's been the best offensive player this year.
Yeah. He's like the Swiss Army knife of the offensive line.
Yeah, and I mean, played left guard, went to center.
Yeah.
Basically no transition at all. It was easy for him, and I think he's going to go down as one of the best Rider offensive linemen of all time when his career is said and done.
So that's a good talking point right now. So you got Geno.
Yeah.
You got Aldag.
Yeah.
And you got Labatt. Would that be your top three right now off the top of your head?
Yeah.
Who would be?
Jeremy O'Day would be in there.
O'Day's in there, but I don't think he's in that. I think Jeremy's not Labatt. He isn't as athletic. Like, you couldn't. I don't think you could put Jeremy consistently in two or three different spots. Like, there was a time in this league where Brendan Labatt could play every position on the offensive line.
Yeah, he used
to put him on tackle, guard, and center. So,
he's got to be up there. I would have to.
Would you go Geno first?
Yeah.
I'd go Geno, Raj, and then Labatt.
And Labatt, for sure.
That's what I don't think.
And we'll see how many more years Labatt has. I mean,
how many do you think he's got? He's in his 11th year, and he says he's
no signs of slowing down.
He's planning to. He signed a 4-year deal. I think he said he's planning to play out his deal there. Now we got a couple of other interesting things here in the offensive line, and you know the Rough Riders made a very astute and timely trade. Mm-hmm. I think getting Lavoie, who's a good special teamer and a good versatile guy, speaking of Swiss Army knives, playing like a fullback slot. Back kind of an H-back position, and then getting Philip Blake, a guy who now has I think 58 starts in the Canadian Football League. That's a timely trade to get him on the offensive line, especially when they lose Bladick and Clark's down too now.
Yeah, it's certainly a good depth move, and really they lost Josh Stanford, who wasn't doing too much for them. And I mean, you can plug in another Canadian like Lavoie or even Bailey or maybe Rob Bagg. Yeah. Hey, yeah, that would be a good idea. Yeah. Maybe
we'll get into that in a second.
Man,
but
that's something else.
Blake is a nice addition.
But yeah, coming in basically practicing once or twice with the team and starting at left guard on his first week, pretty seamless. He wasn't mentioned last week at all in a negative way. So a good depth move. I don't know how long St. John, if we're going on the right side of things, I don't know how long he'll be in there. If he shows well this week, he'll be fine. But Shepley is a guy that could replace him at right guard. Shepley's more of a guard, so.
Well, let's see. This
you might flip Blake to the right side and put Shepley on the left. But
when you're looking
we'll see what St. John does this week.
You're looking at storylines, though, Taylor, This is a game inside the game. Josiah St. John, the first ever selection for Chris Jones in his spot as the first pick overall a few years ago. I mean, this is it. If he doesn't show well here in this game, and he doesn't show well, that's it for, like, he's done as a Rider.
It's his first career start, and that's, I talked to him this week, and he said, he gets annoyed. He's, when people call him a bust, because his story hasn't been written yet, is kind of what he said. He's like, I haven't started a game yet. Why am I a bust already? And I said, well, partially because you haven't played. He says, well, I haven't gotten my opportunities, injuries at the wrong time. And so that kind of, maybe this guy, and until you look at the draft class when everybody's careers are all over, then you can really evaluate who was the best. But like a Singleton was in his draft year. He went later. I mean, would the Riders love to have him? Yes. But maybe, maybe St. John can develop into the starting right guard or even left guard for
He's a guy that's had work ethic issues, though. He got his job taken over when he was a senior at was it Oklahoma or wherever he was at. So he's a guy that's had to overcome that stigma. But this, I agree with what you're saying. I get what he's saying. But this is really his time.
Yeah.
Injuries, everything aside, this team needs you now. Your first overall selection, time to earn your money, and this is a big day for him. And it's not like he's going against Swiss cheese.
Well, this is a tough test.
Micah Johnson and Wigan inside. I mean, they've got a very good interior defensive line, and they'll be playing a bunch of games, up front, too.
Yeah, and I don't know if St. John, if first overall was really a spot where he should have went. He said in Oklahoma he was just a good athlete, and even in his football career, he got to where he was because he was just a good athlete. Yeah. He was just big, and he didn't quite understand the schemes and the footwork. And since he's been with the Rough Riders, I think his first year was tough, missing training camp, holding out. That was a whole other situation he would probably want to redo. But I think in this last year, and even watching him in practice, he's evolving, and his footwork has certainly improved. His quickness in his feet has gotten better, and he's been more physical with his hands and more of his
using his hands.
So he's better in practice, but until you go up against these elite defensive tackles, that's the true test, and it's gonna happen.
So if he wasn't picked so high, and if he wasn't a Chris Jones guy, would he still be on this roster?
Yeah,
I wonder.
I don't know.
The way they're moving guys in and out around here. That one doesn't boggle my mind, but he stayed through everything, and the way they've jettisoned guys in and out, and he stayed there. So this is a very big thing for him. He's on the clock, as we like to say here today. Yep. And I'm going to be watching that one for sure. There's a guy that was let go by Chris Jones in training camp who took the most reps at receiver in training camp along with Chad Owens in Rob Begg. Mm-hmm. He was brought back. Since this football team added Rob Begg back to the locker room, they have a winning record, a decisive winning record, 7-3 in their last 10 since he's been added to the roster. And of course, we know they got rid of Daron Carter. Mm-hmm. We won't go down that road. Are you surprised that Rob Begg has seen very limited action since, I think he dressed in one game?
I think he had one pass.
One pass? Are you surprised that we have not seen Rob Begg more a mainstay?
Yeah, because he's a good second down guy. We were talking earlier, you want your 10-yard pass on second and long, that's a guy you go to. He probably, over the last 8 years, probably leads the Riders in second down conversions. I mean, that's a stat, I think. He's a sure-handed receiver. Uh-huh. He's a physical receiver. And he's what they need right now in terms of that leadership. If a guy is a drop, Rob Begg's probably one of the guys who goes over and says, hey, keep your head up. We'll get him next
play.
So he's a guy, and I imagine he can do that on the sideline. And when he dresses, I don't know if he's going to be left off the roster today. He's on the depth chart, but he might be scratched.
It boggles my mind because he's a Canadian. Yeah. He's a veteran Canadian. He is a Grey Cup champion. Mm-hmm. They add Lavoie, and as good as I said Lavoie is, when he had his best year, he had over 800 yards receiving from the slot. Like, I think he can do
strange.
I think he can do enough to get open. Is he not Chris Jones' guy? Does Chris Jones not want to admit his total? Like, I think it was a partial admission I shouldn't have got rid of him by adding him back to the roster, but now it's like I fully got to admit I made a mistake. I don't know.
There must be something else, and I don't know. I would love to sit down with both those guys and figure out what the situation is all about.
Yeah, like, because you've kept Josiah St. John through all the storms and all the injuries and everything, but you haven't kept Rob. Like, you're not letting Rob Begg show what he can do.
And at wide receiver, the Canadian wide receiver spot doesn't get a lot of balls.
No, it doesn't.
And that's traditionally how it's been. And you surely think that Rob Begg could handle 3 or 4 passes a game, and he's a great blocker.
Easy.
Bring him to the inside for blocking.
Yeah.
I don't get it. He's a valuable spot. he's a valuable player on this roster, and they're not using him.
Yeah, I, like you said, I'd love to sit down with Bag and sit down with Coach Jones. Yeah,
maybe after his career is over.
Yeah, break some bread and have a banquet or something for sure. Hey, when we come back, we're going to go live to Calgary and McMahon Stadium as Luke Molitor will join us for Molitor's matchup. We'll have more with Taylor Shire here. This is Rough Rider Game Day, coming to you live across the Rough Riders Radio Network. With Taylor Shire from Global Sports, I'm Michael Ball, and it is Rough Rider Game Day across the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network. If you'd like a 16-piece meal, along with medium fries, we're going to open up the phone lines, 936-6262 in town. Toll-free out of town, 1-866-767-0620. Brought to you by our good friends at KFC, one of our major sponsors, as you heard, along with Waxy's Bobcat. Time now, though, for Molitor's matchup. Hot out! All right, time to head out on our Mr. Lube hotline. Get fast, warranty-approved, top-to-bottom maintenance at any of the three Mr. Lube Regina locations. And from the foothills, Calgary, Alberta, it is Luke Molitor at McMahon Stadium. How are you today, my friend?
I'm good, man. You brought Taylor Shire off the bench today, huh?
I did, yeah, absolutely.
Well, him in.
Well, here's the problem.
Next man up.
Yeah, next man up. And here's the problem, Luke. You see, all my alumni guys are that whiskey and wine thing and Moose Jaw getting liquored up.
Oh, yeah. So what you're saying is you might get a call from Mike McCullough that's bad for the ratings today.
I don't think McCullough's supposed to do the post game show with me, so he's limiting what he's doing.
So
we're good. Okay, so speaking of good, the Riders weren't in that game against Winnipeg. That's probably the worst game we've watched maybe since 2015 with his football team. What are you sensing here as they go into this game against the Stamps?
Yeah, well, I think that the Winnipeg game just sort of highlighted the fact that, you know, this is an offense that's really been struggling. And when you have an offense that's really been struggling and can't seem to get any momentum, you've got to play well in the other two phases. And, you know, again, we talk a lot about on the radio, hey, listen, you know, you got to be an offense that if it's going to take you a while to score some points, or you're not going to score that many points, then, you know, just don't turn the ball over, right? Give the defense a chance. Keep them off the field. Let them get some rest. So today I think it's the same sort of deal, Ballsy. You know, I think this Calgary defense is like number one in like eight different categories. It's insane. And, of course, they're right up there in turnover ratio right now. So, again, we're looking at a team that is going to play well defensively. So the Riders, again, it's going to be one of those things. You got to grind out some points. I think this week, Ballsy, to be honest, I think the defense has got to give them 10.
Got to give us 10 points, is what you're saying?
Yeah, I think so. I think the defense, and that's okay, right? If the defense goes in knowing that, hey, we're going to have to score, guys, then at least it's something that you can put up on your board and you can set a goal for yourself, right? But right now, you know, with this offense, the way it's playing, again, you look at it and you're going to need some help. So if it's not 10 points on the defense, it's definitely, you know, maybe 7 points from special teams. But somewhere else has got to produce for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders this week.
We were talking about Josiah St. John at right guard getting his first start. Do you think he can hold his own this week?
Well, actually, I mean, when you look at the Molitor's matchup, here's the deal with Josiah St. John. Rider Nation is about to see what you have in Josiah St. John. Right, you've got Dakota Shepley in house. You've got Philip Blake in house. You've got Brendan Labatt playing at center. Ballsy, a good friend of ours, Coach Gary Archiver, used to say it all the time. Canadian players need to see guys in the locker room that can play in order for them to get the most talent out of those guys. Mm-hmm. Right. So, for instance, me myself, I always needed a guy behind me that was good, not just a guy that was from U Sport and hadn't played, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like literally a guy who had produced. I remember in 2007, I played really well as part of the rotation on the defensive line. Why? Because the team brought in Tim Fleiser, who had 3 Grey Cup rings already, right? Mm-hmm. So again, you're looking at Josiah St. John now. He's got guys behind him who are going to really press him for a spot we're about to find out what we got in that former number one overall pick.
So is that your matchup today, what Josiah St. John does? Or what do you see?
Yeah, I think the matchup's got to be Josiah St. John versus a guy like Micah, right? Micah Johnson. I mean, you're looking at the best defensive tackle in the league. He's going to produce at a high level. And not only is Micah Johnson going to produce and play well, I mean, Josiah St. John's got to be up to that. But again, Calgary stunts a lot, right? Ballsy, I mean, you see them on the film all the time. They're running defensive line games. They're bringing linebackers. Josiah St. John has to keep his eyes true. If someone's going, somebody's coming. Josiah St. John has to understand that. He's been in games where, you know, he's stuck on to defensive linemen who are stunting for too long, and it's hurt the quarterback. So, again, Josiah St. John, all eyes on him. I'm really excited to see a guy like Chad Jeter get a lot of reps. And keep an eye on the right tackle for Calgary, Nila Kasatati. This is a former Polynesian College Football Player of the Year, guys. And he's a gamer. He's been in three games for the Calgary Stampeders so far, and I think they like him. So, again, going to be a good game. Offense needs to start producing. Defense or special teams got to score a little bit for him, I think, here in order to have success. But, again, it's a very winnable game, Ballsy.
Okay, lastly, Luke Mulder, I can't get my – I know they're 10. I know they're 10 and what are 10 and 6, and I know they've been successful and they're on the cusp of a home playoff game. So I'm not going to be overly harsh. But do you honestly see this formula working on a playoff run where you just told me that you think the defense needs to score 10 points to win a game? You really think we can just go with defense and special teams and have an offense, as Taylor said earlier in the broadcast, just get us 200 yards and not turn it over? To me, that's not a recipe for a Grey Cup champion. But do you agree or disagree?
Well, no, it's not a recipe for a Grey Cup championship, right? But, again, I mean, it's just it's the route you got to take, right, Ballsy? I think that, you know, this offense, again, it showed they can score, right? Mm-hmm. It just hasn't been consistent enough. So, again, you got to use these last couple games to find some consistency within yourself. And, again, you know, that's okay that the defense and special teams may have to contribute 10. You know what I mean? Like, give some great field position, for instance. Like, if special teams, you don't need a great return. But, man, you need a couple returns that get, for instance, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders in Calgary territory, right, because they struggle to do it themselves, right? So, again, the more you can, you know, dominate the field position battle through special teams, maybe score, that are better off the chances. And, again, this team has to start fast today. Just like the Winnipeg game last week, Ballsy, when the last time Saskatchewan played Calgary, they were down 17-0 almost immediately because of turnovers. So today you can't turn the ball over, whether you're on O or special teams.
That's Luke Mulliner, Mulliner's matchup or color analyst across the Rough Riders radio network. We'll be eagerly listening to your call with Rod Peterson. Thanks for this, buddy.
All right, man. You guys have a great show.
Take care, man. All right, we're going to come back and we're going to chat a little more with Taylor Shire. And Taylor and I will have Darian Durant on the line for the Devil's Take on the Mr. Lube Hotline. This is Rough Rider Game Day, brought to you by KFC and Waxy's Bobcat on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders radio network. And all our guests come to you on the Mr. Lube Hotline. Get fast, warranty-approved, top-to-bottom maintenance at any of the three Mr. Lube Regina locations. I'm Michael Ball, along with Taylor Shire from Global Sports here in Regina. Let's head out on the Mr. Lube Hotline now and talk to rider legend Darian Durant. Darian, how are you today, my friend?
I'm good. How you doing today?
We're doing good. And I've got Taylor Shire in here from Global Sports, too. So let's chat a little bit about this football game today. The Saskatchewan Rough Riders need to win one of two to get a home playoff game. At least they have an outside chance at first in the West. Was this your favorite place to play on the road, Calgary?
It is. I mean, you can count on Rider Nation showing up in the plentiful, you know, in Calgary each and every time. They even make it tough on Calgary in their home place. And it was always a wonderful environment. It always seemed like something was at stake when we played against Calgary. So it was always a big game.
This week in Rider Nation, Charleston Hughes, obviously, he was in the news for a DUI situation, and he was going to play, and then the club decided he's not going to play. I'm not asking you to comment on the legal ramifications there, but how does something like that affect the locker room? Does it really affect the locker room, and might it actually bode well for the Riders down the road as you rest the 34-year-old's legs? I don't like the circumstances, obviously, but you know what I mean? You'd rather sit him out just to rest his legs without a legal problem. But how does this affect the team?
Well, I think more than anything, it affects the team on the field, his performance. I mean, you're taking off, you know, probably one of the best players on that team. You're taking him out of this huge game. As far as the locker room goes, I'm not sure it affects the locker room. You know, there are a lot of things that go on behind the scenes in each and every locker room, so I don't think it'll affect the locker room. But just his production, the way he changes game plans, and, you know, just him going back to McMahon playing in a game like this, I think that hurts the team on the field more than anything.
Darian, how are you, man?
I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm pretty good. I wanted to ask you a little bit about Rob Bagg and kind of his situation. What do you make of it? I mean, he gets signed back to the roster after being cut following training camp, but hasn't really seen the field. What do you make about the whole situation with him?
Honestly, I really think he was just brought back to mentor the guys. I mean, if you look at that receiver room, there's not a veteran, you know, over 4 years, you know, maybe Naaman. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, with the release of Bakari Grant and Chad Owens and then, you know, what happened with Robbie, he's the only one in there with you know, some sort of a voice. He can help those younger guys. There's only so much the wide receiver coach can do. You need a veteran in that room to help the guys on the field, you know, on the sidelines, different things like that. So I think he was brought back more so as a coaching slash mentor aspect more so than to produce. But I really would love to see Rob out there. I think he can help that team tremendously.
And you're a
quarterback, you know, helps Zach as well.
Yeah, you're good buddies with him. Do you think it's eating at him a little bit to not be on the field and sort of to be in this role?
Of course. I mean, Robbie's a, you know, he's a competitor, man. He still feels like he has, you know, everything left in the tank. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, I've never seen a guy work out as hard as he has. He's ready to go each and every week, and it's definitely frustrating for him.
It's a head scratcher for me, Darian, because we got a team that did, they had 9 first downs after the third quarter last week. They didn't get it inside the 40-yard line. They didn't even have a situation where Lowther could come on and kick a field goal. And you got a guy that's a Grey Cup champion that keeps himself in unbelievable shape. He's 33, but let's face it, he's closer to 28, okay? And the guy had 800 yards in the slot. You'd think, you know, in 2015, I believe, when Roosevelt got hurt. Here's a guy that I think in a playoff run, when you're trying to nail down a home playoff game, put him on the damn field.
I mean, you need that experience. I mean, defenses change when the weather changes, when you get into big games. You need a guy who's been there, done that. And, you know, the Riders, they lack that experience in the receiving core with Naaman being down at Hurts. And you know, I don't understand, you know, you sign a guy a couple weeks ago, you bring him in to play over Rob. I don't understand it. But, I mean, you know, it's not for me to question, but – at the end of the day, I really believe that Robbie could help that offense, and he could be a security blanket for Zach or some type of guy that, you know, quarterbacks love a guy who's been in the heat of battle, who's, you know, who's been in a big game. And for Zach, he needs a guy like that, and I think Robbie would be the perfect guy.
I don't want to throw any coordinators under the bus or anything, but take me through the quarterback's mind when it's second and long and they call for a 2-yard hitch pass. Why aren't you running the hot route, running a 10-yard play in that situation?
Honestly, I just think that it may be a situation where it's don't hurt us, don't force anything that could lead to a turnover. We'll punt and we'll play defense, honestly. You know, as a quarterback, I can only speak for myself, but I don't like it. I would love to be aggressive each and every opportunity. You know, in order to win, you have to score points. I think we've been talking about this for weeks. You know, this part of the season, this part of the schedule, you're going to need to score points. And, you know, it starts with getting first downs. And I don't understand that philosophy unless it's all about defense.
Over your career, did you or how often did you have a time where you got the call and disagree with it and were almost hesitant to run the play?
No, I don't think that happened to me much. Honestly, I feel like all of the offensive coordinators I've had, they've had confidence that, you know, I would, you know, do the best thing possible for the team in a second and long situation. So, you know, I can't imagine how Zach would feel, you know, knowing that if it's second and 10, you know, coaches are looking towards punting and, You know, you coming off the field as a competitor, I wouldn't like that at all.
Darian Durant joining us here for the Devil's Take on the Mr. Lube hotline. And I don't think, like, you know, when he goes to the line and they have that stop motion and it's like he changes the play, it's not like he's freelancing and calling his own play. He's got two options there that comes from the coaching staff, I believe, Darian. I don't think that's Zach freelancing at the end, is
exactly.
it?
No. Whenever you do that freeze motion, you know, you're just looking to see what the defense is in. You go to the line with two calls, and based on the coverage and what you've seen in meetings all week, you have two calls that you can run based on what the defense is running.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about one of the guys that you went to a war against for a number of years, and I know you had a relationship with, and he's had injury problems. But I'll tell you what, my second favorite team in the CFL has always been the BC Lions, and I really like how Travis Lule has carried himself. He was a star, Grey Cup MVP in 2011, has had lots of injury problems. He's taken a backseat as a backup, as a guiding force for Jonathan Jennings, and then got his jaw back, then got hurt again, and now he's back. He had four touchdown passes last night, and he leads his team into the playoffs. I mean, that's just a good feel-good story for a good guy, too.
And what a guy. I mean, you're just so happy for a guy like that. He deserves it. And, you know, like you said, to fight the way he has, to go from, you know, the peak of your profession and then suffer an injury, and then, you know, honestly, he's just a great guy. Just to suck it up and be able to be a backup and, you know, sit there and let someone else lead his team, and then to be able to make it to where he has now in Wally's last season. I mean, my hat's off to Travis. He knows how I feel about him, and I'm just so happy for him. And you know, honestly, I think this BC Lion team can be dangerous if they can, you know, continue to creep up and in the standings and, you know, continue to play well. They can make some noise.
Yeah, I mean, and they made a couple of astute trades here at the end. They got Devere Posey, they picked him up on free agency, and then they end up getting Sutton out of Montreal. I mean, he's a mucker. He's a mutter. He's a guy that likes to run hard, and that's what you need in the playoffs, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you just look at the history, the weather, you know, these cold games. You're going to – these guys – defensive backs, they're, you know, 180, 190 pounds. They don't want to come tackle a big back. And then you look at, you know, over time, the Sheets, Messam, Cornish, you know, Sutton, he's that type of guy that in the playoffs, he's a dangerous runner. He's a guy that can get you 5, 6, 7 yards on first down to, you know, help you in second down situations. So I love that move by Ed Hervey, you know, and you can see what he's preparing for. He's preparing for outside playoff football, and you need a back like that.
Well, in Calgary, I mean, what can you say about Calgary? Bo Levi Mitchell just continues to get it done with a receiving core that seems to change on a weekly basis due to injuries. I mean, they still got Durant, Breskin, and you know, Rogers is back, but I mean, you don't have Tavares Daniels, you don't have Kamar Jordan. Begelton was on fire. He's out. I mean, and Michelle's out too now. I mean, this Calgary Stampeders organization, doesn't matter who you plug in, they just show up and play.
Man, that just goes to show you Huff and his staff, them going out finding guys. You know, you don't ever hear about them going out signing guys from other teams. They bring up players in the organization. They put them on the practice squad. They put them in that system. You look at the offensive and defensive systems. It's been in place for years and years and years. They allow guys to just grow into these systems, and when it's time for them to play, they can just play. They're not learning a new playbook. It's something that they've been learning for years, being in the meetings, being on the practice squad. So you just look at the recruiting and, you know, the going out finding talent that Huffnagel does. It's plug and play with these guys. As long as you have a guy like Bo Levi, you can bring in guys. As long as they know the system, he'll get it done.
I don't know if you had a game quite like the Riders did last week when they got shut out in Winnipeg. But, you know, thinking about some of your, you know, less memorable games, how much – does it help you the next week going through, you know, almost what could be called a wake-up call?
Well, sometimes you need that. You know, the Rider offense was riding high. The team was riding high pretty much, had a nice win streak going, won some big games. And, you know, sometimes you need to be brought back down to earth and you need to come to work. When you start winning and you put together a streak, when you come to work every day, sometimes you tend not to put in as much work as you have when you lose. So coming back down to earth, you know, get your butt kicked from time to time. It's definitely a wake-up call. And, you know, we'll see. The Riders had some good, you know, offense had some good games against some Eastern teams. But, like I said, the West is a different animal, and we'll see tonight.
Last word goes to you, Mr. Durant. So if the Rough Riders are winning today, what do they got to do?
The defense has to score. That's first and foremost. They win games when that defense scores, and they have to put pressure on Bo Levi Mitchell. If you can get him throwing off his back foot and can keep him, you know, off balance in the pocket, then you give yourself a chance.
Hey, is this the best defense that you've seen since you've played or been watching the CFL, the one the Riders have right now in terms of their
– when
yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Honestly, like when they're on their game, I haven't seen a better defense. It starts with those two defensive ends in Charleston Hughes and Willie Jefferson. Great linebackers and DBs that can fly all over the field and are ball hawks. But I just wonder about their inconsistencies, man. As soon as you seem to praise them and you give them all the credit in the world, they come and they have a game like they did last week. So being a great defense is all about consistency, and we'll see how consistent they can be.
Well, I'm just going to wrap it up by saying Luke Mulder was on before you, and he said the same thing. They need to get 10 points. To me, when Luke Mulder says that and Darian Durant says we need to score on defense, that is not a formula for victory in the CFL. I'm sorry, but it's not.
Especially not on the road and not when you're dealing with the Beast and the Calgary Stampeders. It's tough to score against them. Bo Levi doesn't turn the ball over a lot. So the Riders, you know, it's going to be an uphill battle tonight. But, you know, we've seen things happen, crazy things happen each and every week, so we'll see.
It's a pleasure talking to you, Darian. Thanks for stopping by again, okay?
Oh, no problem. Thanks again.
That's Darian Durant and the Doubles Take on the Rough Riders Radio Network. We'll be back with more in a moment. And this is Growing the Game, and joining me on the phone right now is Paul Waldo, of course, from our Rider Radio Network. But today, he's got his coaching hat on. He's the coach of the U of S Husky secondary, and you guys have a big game today against the Manitoba Bisons. Really, this is a game that could catapult you towards second place if you continue to win.
Absolutely. I mean, we haven't gone off the right foot in the last couple of weeks here with losing back-to-back games, so we really got to come out and play Manitoba as a very athletic team. And obviously with the unfortunate circumstances with the Regina Rams, you know, those other teams like UBC and like Manitoba were catapulted essentially with an extra win on their belt there. So we got to make sure we come out and handle our business.
You know, the Rams feel they got screwed, and I think rightfully so. But you know what? In the process, I think the Huskies got screwed too, because the way it's looking now, UBC beats you guys. They're in the driver's seat for second place, where before they were on the outside looking in. And now, you know, you guys are kind of scrambling a bit, whereas if everything would have stayed status quo, that last game here at Mosaic Stadium, Rams and Huskies could have been for second place and home field advantage.
Absolutely. Well, that's exactly how it would have worked out. We're nobody to be, crying over spilled milk per se, obviously, in comparison to what the Rams are going through. But, yeah, essentially, you know, going into the bye week, UBC was 1-4, just lost to U of A, and I felt like they were kind of on a downward spiral. And all of a sudden, you know, within a few days, they got an extra win, and now they're fighting for second place. And obviously, they were able to do what they had to do to beat us. And same with Manitoba, a team we beat earlier in the year, once again is catapulted with another extra win. And now we're in even more of a dogfight than we ever were, as opposed to just, you know, continuing to grind it out and see what was going to happen in the last game of the season at Mosaic.
Now, this is weird for you. It's weird for you because you live in Regina, Paul, and you know a lot of people on the Rams. Your brother used to coach
Absolutely.
With the Rams. So,
Absolutely.
But you're also in the league. So as a guy that's in the league but a guy that lives in our town, how much are you cheering for the Rams against the UFC Dinos this weekend?
You know, I'm always cheering for the Rams. You know, always have. I grew up around the program. You know, I was obviously, you know, close to even going there to play there. So as a local kid, obviously, it's, you know, you always want to side. The only time I don't support them is when they're playing us. But other than that, you want them to win. I mean, especially with the circumstances they've had now, it's not fair that they got to forfeit those wins for a clerical or an administrative error, whatever you want to classify it as. I think it's bullshit. So it's a terrible situation for them. So you hope they go and they win and they have a chance.
Yeah, Paul Waldo joining us here for Growing the Game. Now, Paul, before we talk a little bit of Rider action here, let's wrap up talking about your football team. And one guy that our colleague Perry Nias, his son Mason, we've talked about him at times. Whenever this kid comes off the bench, he gets things done. Just to assess his game last week, because I think his game, the stats lie. He had a touchdown and three interceptions, but I think the stats lie in that case.
Yeah, I mean he came in, obviously, it's tough enough to be a quarterback in the league, but to come off the bench cold, I mean, you know, he goes in there and he works us through a 75-yard play drive and we score a touchdown, right? I mean, you know, the interceptions, I mean, it's everybody. It's not just one guy throwing the ball. I think it starts there, but, you know, receivers running the proper routes and making sure they get separation and sitting down in the zones and just supposed to sit down and do the certain things that they have to do. And we're incredibly young in the receiving corps, and I don't think that really helped him out by any stretch of the imagination. But, I mean, the kid's got moxie. He's going to be a star in this league, and we're looking forward to seeing what he's able to do down the road.
Manitoba U of S matchup this weekend, and your first game against the Bisons was a very high-scoring affair in Winnipeg. Yeah. You guys came up with a victory, so are you expecting the same type of game?
Yeah, I mean, I hope not. you don't want to give up that many touchdowns, and like I said, I mean, a shootout, and you know, fortunate enough we were able to come on the good side, and we made some big plays on defense. Obviously, scoring one and, you know, three interceptions, I think, in total. But you want to be able to control the game, I think, and we're a team built, especially from an offensive standpoint, where we really try to control the line of scrimmage and pound the ball, right? So we're not really a high scoring over a short span of time. So our defense has got to make sure that we get the ball back, and we, like I said, control the game and come out with a victory.
Paul Waldo joining us here, of course, a regular radio analyst in the Rough Riders Radio Network, but he's got to coach the Huskies today, taking on the Bisons. Okay, let's quickly talk about these Rough Riders. I mean, what can you say about that Winnipeg game except yuck?
Yeah, yuck is right. Yuck is right. I think, you know, it's you always want to be able to learn from a loss and kind of take and just sweep it under the rug, but I don't think you can do that, because I think what it did is it exploited our lack of production on offense, which I think we knew from the very beginning, but felt like was overshadowed by such strong and great play from the defense and the special team standpoint. So, you know, two out of three phases, I think, have essentially been making up for the one phase that you really need to come on, especially down the stretch. You know, it was tough, and, you know, people were complaining about play calling, and, you know, we're not running the ball, but, you know, essentially it's hard to run the ball when you're down 21 points in the first quarter or whatever it is, right? So I think it's a cause for a bit of concern, especially from a health standpoint, because, you know, you lose Dan Clark and you take, you know, arguably the best guard in the league and Brendan Ladd, move him to the center, and then you indirectly, I think, affect that whole offensive line. You lose Bladick, he gets hurt. You know, Naaman Roosevelt and Air Jordan are in the lineup, and to me, those are really the only two guys that are threatening, that really scare you. And so you look at it, and it's a pretty average offense. And once again, I don't think that's going to get it done. So hopefully they can rebound and find ways to be more productive, because they're going to need it going into McMahon Stadium to a Calgary Stampeders team who I don't think has lost back-to-back games at home in probably 10 years.
Now, I'll tell you this, Paul. You need offense to win in this league, at least a bit of offense. I mean, the Riders have been outscored. They've been outscored this year, yet 10 wins. That's happened four other times in the CFL, and all four times those teams have failed to win a Grey Cup or make it to the Grey Cup. So the Rough Riders are going to have to find something here in terms of offensively. Like, if they could even score two touchdowns and get a field goal, they'd be in the mix.
You know, it's crazy because as a defense, your goal always, and professional, and even now with our kids, is always to hold the team 21 or less. That's the plan. That's the game plan. At the end of the day, you know, turnovers and this and that and the other thing, all you want to do is make sure a team doesn't score 21 points or more. You don't want them to score. And so it's interesting how we're talking about just scraping to get some sort of production where at least if they could score a couple of touchdowns. But once again, they're going to have to find ways, because when they've been doing it, when they've been winning, it's because they've been scoring the touchdowns. It's just been in two other phases.
And average quarterbacking doesn't get the Grey Cup victories, because if you go back and you look at the last kind of average quarterback to get it done was Marcus Crandall in 2001 for Calgary, and they actually had an average offense. I wouldn't even call the Riders' offense average right now.
I mean, like I said, you know, women lie, men lie, but numbers don't. You look at it just statistically, and you just look at what the total offensive yardage, and most of all, most importantly, is the production. And we're just not finding ways to score offensively. And that, once again, it can work at the beginning of the year, but at the end of the day, you just can't expect your defense and special teams to score multiple touchdowns a game. It's just not going to work.
Okay, lastly, they get Dakota Shepley signed, though, their first pick, who went to the Jets. Now, absolutely. how much or how long do you think it'll take for him to come here and be a factor?
You know, I think that's an interesting question, especially from an offensive line standpoint, because once again, just like anything, the adjustment to the game, he's a kid, thankfully, who's played, I mean, his entire collegiate career here in Canada, so he will be used to, you know, the 1 yard rule and obviously, you know, having to pass that really high and essentially being out on an island if he does end up playing that tackle position or wherever they play him. But, you know, I think he'll be able to come in and contribute. And obviously he's a guy who's been in shape. You know, once again, it's not like he's a Canadian kid who's played in the States for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years and has to come up and adjust. So, I mean, they're going to need help. It sounds like Wadick's probably going to be out long term. And we obviously don't know the exact status of Dan Clark. So these two games, the playoffs, the postseason starts this weekend.
Lastly, it's very disappointing and very discouraging that people don't come out and watch university sports, university football. Like the Rams, they were drawing flies. I know the weather last week wasn't very good, but you know,
right.
You talk about Shepley, he played for the UBC Thunderbirds. There are so many great players in the Can West that we don't spend $20 to go watch, but we'll wait till they're in the CFL and spend $80 to watch them.
It really doesn't make sense, especially when they're going to need the support is when they're young. You know, once you get to a professional level, I mean, you know, you're getting paid to play. You shouldn't care who shows up or who doesn't. But as a kid, right, having your family and having, you know, students in schools and the community support you is an incredible thing. And I think that adds to, you know, a young football player's journey. And so it's sad that, you know, people won't come out and support their local teams, especially around here where you got teams like Regina and teams like the Huskies, or even, you know, going out to BC, have great players that are going to go on to be CFL stars.
Paul, thanks for this. Good luck today against the Bisons, buddy.
My pleasure. Take care, Baldy.
And welcome back inside studio here. Michael Ball along with Taylor Shire. We did not get a hold of Nick Lewis today because Nick Lewis is getting inducted into South Arkansas State University's Hall of Fame. So, nice. Absolutely. He's a guy, of course, the all-time receptions leader in the Canadian Football League and being honored by his school today. So he is down south and we do not have him. Wanted to say congratulations to Dennis, who won the a 16-piece meal and medium fries from KFC. So congratulations to him. And I want to thank KFC and Waxy's Bobcat for their sponsorship of Rough Rider Game Day and our Mr. Lube hotline, bringing you the guests. So instead of Nick Lewis, we got the all-time sportscasting legend, Taylor Shire,
right,
here to talk about a little bit about more about this game. The Calgary Stampeders, you talked about that draft where Josiah St. John was taken, but also in that draft was Alex Singleton. I like to call him one of those fake Canadians. He's a Canadian because I think his mom is Canadian or something like that, but definitely has been an anchor of that defense.
Yeah, a lot of the teams who didn't select him or who passed him over are certainly regretting it at this point. An elite middle linebacker in the CFL and maybe the most valuable because of his passport,
yeah.
I guess, because he is Canadian. I mean, you could argue that, you know, Elamimian or Adam Big Hill would be up there for middle linebackers, but given that Singleton is a Canadian, I would say he's probably the most valuable.
That's definitely a difference maker. I was going to ask you, if you were a team – GM, who would you take? Would you go with Singleton or would you go with Big Hill? Obviously Singleton because of the passport, but everything being equal, who would you go with?
Well, Adam Big Hill's a playmaker and he was good in BC because he had Elamimian, and now he's kind of coming into his own in Winnipeg.
Right.
I think he's more of a leader there, and he's he's all over the field. We even saw last week he was going side to side. He seems quicker.
Yeah.
So Big Hill is probably a better athlete, but you can't argue with Singleton.
We're talking about moving the chains here. That's this, the title of this feature. The Riders failed to score at Winnipeg, as we know, and were shut out for the first time since a 24-0 defeat to Edmonton on July 26, 2014. Now, they were held to season lows of 170 yards and 12 first downs last week and had just six offensive plays in Winnipeg's end of the field. They got to find a way, like we've said earlier, they got to find a way. If they can get 10 points offensively, and if their defense plays the way they have for the most part, they've got a chance to win this game.
The thing about the defense, and we touched on it earlier, but they're sort of inconsistent. Mm-hmm. At times, they'll make a great play and score points, but then the next game or even the next series, they'll give up an explosion, a 75-yard touchdown pass, like we saw last week. So they're not as consistent of a defense as, like, we talk about elite defenses. Those are teams that give up the least amount of yards, no points, you know, game after game, series after series. This team is just scoring a ton on defense, and that's, it helps out the offense, but
yeah,
they're also not helping out themselves by giving up those explosions.
It's a very good point. We talked about Singleton anchoring Calgary's great defense. As Luke said, eight categories they lead. Micah Johnson, I don't know if he gets enough publicity. Maybe he does. Maybe I don't give him enough publicity. Comes into this game in the middle of a six-game stretch with seven sacks. He's got one in each of the last three games. He's up to number two in the CFL with 11, so four back at Charleston, who isn't playing this week. Johnson's increased his sack total in every season of his career. 2, 3, 6, 7, 9, and 11's up to 38 in a total of 78 games. That is going to be the interesting matchup. You got Micah Johnson, Wigan inside, and as we talk with Luke in Mulliner's matchup, they like to do a lot of stunting, so Josiah St. John is going to be he'll be on an island sometimes.
Yeah, we'll have to watch that quite closely. And what's going to help the Riders is their running backs. Mm-hmm. You need to spot the running back sort of behind St. John or behind maybe wherever Johnson is coming through. And if he gets through the line and breaks through, the running back can at least pick up the blitz for another 1 or 2 seconds to buy Caleros a little bit more time. I don't know. St. John, he very well might hold his own this week, but Johnson's going to run some things. Being a veteran of the league, he's going to run some different moves, some swim moves or some just straight power moves and just kind of a bull rush over
him. I think it's not going to be anything like I'm going to just run over you. You try to block me. Yeah. I really believe that because
stunting to the outside and different things that St. John might be caught off guard. He's not a rookie per se, but this is his first start. So.
Hey, we talked about the Riders' offensive MVP, and we joked it's Brendan Labatt. But in all seriousness, if you were to pick an offensive MVP for this football team right now, who are you picking?
That's the sound of silence, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, Marcus Thigpen has been flashy.
He's had an 80 and 82-yard touchdown run, but he doesn't get the ball enough.
Yeah, there's no statistical leader on this team that's up anywhere near the league leaders in terms of
anything.
Any of the stats.
Trey Mason's going to have to, he's been okay.
He's been solid, but not
spectacular.
Thigpen's been flashy, and I would probably just say Thigpen. Caleros has been okay.
Yeah. We talked about Calgary and we talked about with Darien about how they just plug guys in. Mm-hmm. But they've got young guys that come along in the system, right? The Riders have that, but Calgary usually has a veteran guy or two veteran guys. You know, like Nick Lewis is there to bring on a Kamar Jordan, bring him along. He was on the practice squad for a couple of years and then played a couple of games here or there. The Riders have just gone all young, and, Naaman's hurt, and they're not really using bags. So that they've kind of gone with a different situation there. These guys are learning on the fly.
Yeah, starting three or four rookie receivers. At times, they've played well. Williams Lambert kind of came out of nowhere, kind of came from a mini camp, and now he was basically he's the go-to receiver for the Riders. So, I mean, he's not elite, but he's good, and he's serviceable. He can start in this league, but they need guys like last year, like in terms of Bakari Grant. He was a go-to guy last year. You knew that he would have no fear crossing the middle or Naaman when he's on the roster. They need more guys like that. I mean, Kyron Moore, he's fast, but he's going to have drops.
And he's starting to hit a bit of a rookie wall, yeah.
And Shaq Evans is sort of the same. He's had a few drops. He can hold his own out.
Leads the team in receiving yards.
But
yeah.
What's he, 15th in the league?
Yeah, probably? I mean, exactly. He's not even near the top for sure. And, I guess if you're looking at offensive MVPs, I don't know if he falls in that category, but Brett Lowther, the kicker.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been pretty good. He's missed a couple lately, but he's been pretty consistent, the guy.
You know, really scoring the most points with this team.
Yeah.
I mean, kickers traditionally do, but.
I mean, when you think about it, let me ask you this question after I read this.
Well, Willie Jefferson probably has the most points.
He's got more. He's got more receiving touchdowns than some of our receivers.
There you go.
He does.
He's
absolutely
the best receiver. There you go. That's my offensive MVP.
And he was the receiver. here's this. How about this? The Riders are eighth with just 22 touchdown drives to week 18 and have now gone their last 35 possessions without a touchdown. After 15 games last year, the Rough Riders had 41 touchdowns on offense. So let me ask you this. Hindsight being 2020 as it is, we spent over $400,000 to get Zach Collaros in here, and I thought with the offense we had around him from last year, that was a great signing. I had no problem with it, and I don't even know if you could fairly judge him right now. He hasn't been great, but he's been hurt, and he doesn't exactly have the weapons that he thought he was going to have coming into this year. But knowing what you know now, they pay over $400,000 to have him, and they give a bump and a raise to Brandon Bridge to keep him around. But then they go cheaper with the receiving core and offense. Would you have rather kept Kevin Glenn here with Brandon Bridge on a raise and kept a couple of your receivers here?
I think they were more planning for the future and not just another 1 year stopgap. Hey, we're going to plug Glenn in just for another year. I mean, Claros isn't old yet, but they I think had him as their starting quarterback for the next 6 or 7 years. And maybe that's why they went out and got him, because Kevin Glenn, you know, he's old, reliable, and he's been there, done that. And they had a great offensive, offense last year with Glenn and
3 1,000 yard receivers.
They were great. They were good. And then paired with this defense this year, that's a pretty elite team if their offense can score points like they did last year.
And that's what I've been saying all along. Yeah. If you would have kept Glenn with this, if we're just looking to win a championship, I get the future. Yeah. But so here's the next question. Mike Riley's a free agent after this year. I'm going to assume I'm going to pick right now the Eskimos probably don't make the playoffs, which is unbelievable to me. So the Eskimos don't make the playoffs. Jason Moss is probably out as the coach there. He should be. He's a tire fire. So you've got Mike Riley. Does Mike Riley stay in Edmonton? Does he explore BC? Or would the Riders get in the bidding war for Mike Riley with his history with Chris Jones?
Yeah, you wonder what his connection with Chris Jones really is. And
I've heard he was more Ned Hervey guy than Chris Jones.
So does he go to BC?
Yeah.
Does BC take a run
at him? That's where he started his career, right?
So does Ed Hervey take a run at him? Or does he stay with the familiarity in Edmonton? I mean, you know, he's comfortable there.
Do you think the Riders have buyer's remorse on Zach Collaros?
I mean,
without talking to them?
At this point, no. But maybe in 3 or 4 years when it doesn't pan out. It's clear he's not the Collaros of 2015.
Yeah, 2015, even 2014.
It's quite clear.
Yeah.
But that's not to say he can't get there eventually. I mean, at the start of the year, we were saying, oh, he's just shaking off some rust from the last season. Yeah. But how bad he looked in Hamilton last year, which led to him being benched, he hasn't shown signs of that's not him anymore.
That's right.
He hasn't gone back to the 2015 Collaros where he was going to be the league's MLP.
Yeah.
So until he can get back to that, and maybe he can't, but he still has time to do it with even 2 games left this season. If he can have a great playoffs, it just takes one game.
It's not
a 7-game series.
That's
this team doesn't need to play well over 7 games to win the series. You need to have one good game.
Yeah.
And then one good game the next week.
And then one good game the next week.
And then you win.
Yeah, that's true. Right? That's a good point. When we come back, we'll get some closing thoughts and a prediction from Taylor Shire of Global Sports. This is Rough Rider Game Day, brought to you by KFC and Waxy's Bobcat across the Rough Riders Radio Network. After the football game, we're going to have the Sports Cage Radio Roundtable here on the Rough Rider Radio Network. Myself and former Rider Mike McCullough will be fielding your calls as we talk about this Riders victory, hopefully victory over the Calgary Stampeders. If they win one of their last two, they'll have a home playoff game. They have an outside shot at the Western final, hosting the Western final. Here's the problem, though, Taylor Shire, as we welcome you on once again from Global Sports. They got that bye in the last week of the regular season. I know Chris Jones did it the year they won in Edmonton, and he did some creative to keep the team going, but I don't know if I want to have a bye and then have another bye and then, you know, be that much in, you know, in between games.
Realistically, the, you know, first place is sort of out of the question because you need Calgary to lose out. I mean, it all depends on this week, and then you got to basically scoreboard watch for two more weeks. But this team, this Rider team, is working towards a home playoff game, and second place gets you a home playoff game. So their backs aren't really up against the wall. You know, they do have some leeway. It's in their own hands in terms of them getting a playoff game. They win this week or they win next week, and it's fine. First place, yes, it's mathematically still there, but there's a lot of other things that need to happen.
Hey, I want to give a shout-out. We heard from Paul Waldo in the Growing the Game in the Mr. Lube Hotline, coaching the U of S Huskies. Right now they're tied at 4 on a windy day up in Saskatoon, tied at 4 with Manitoba. Saskatchewan wins, and they're clinching a playoff spot. Of course, the Rams were eliminated from the playoffs yesterday, and they'll wrap up their season here next week against the U of S Huskies. Okay, I want to say hi to Jada, too, an old colleague of mine. She's listening in Stonewall, Manitoba, at her uncle's 65th birthday, staying in a dive hotel, listening to Taylor Shire and Ballsy. So I'm going to tell you, it doesn't get any better than
life
that. Does
doesn't
it?
Get much better
No, it doesn't
that,
get
eh?
Much better than that. Dive hotel. Bo Levi Mitchell or Mike Riley? Who if you were starting a team today, who you taking? Take the ages out of it.
Yeah, I'd take Mike Riley. He's a competitor.
Yeah.
I like the leader in him. He's a guy that'll, you know, do anything. Bo Levi Mitchell, good passer and great track record of winning. I don't
68-13-2. Do you think he's a product of their system?
It's both, right?
Yeah.
Right place, right time, good quarterback, puts the ball in the right spot. He's elite, but I would take Mike Riley.
He has the fewest two-game losing streaks. Mm-hmm. One two-game losing streak. That's it. So Calgary doesn't lose many back-to-back games.
Especially at home.
That's right.
Back-to-back at home.
Now, he needs to average 216.3 passing yards to reach 5,000 for the second time in his career. In 2018, he was number three in yards per game at 290, on pace for 5,221 yards, 164 shy of his career best, which was 5,385 yards. I don't know. This Calgary Stampeders team, they really are the New England Patriots of the CFL minus the championships. Yeah. But I think that's the Calgary fan base is like, prove it to us in the playoffs. You know, they got to get over the hump. And this might be the year when they go through all the trials. And usually at this time, the Calgary Stampeders have no drama, no nothing. They're almost lulled into a false
sense
of security.
They're almost resting some of
the
key players.
Now they're actually trying to work some guys into a system to get ready for a playoff drive because they got to get these new guys up to speed.
Yeah, looking at the receivers. But they don't seem to, you know, this like Ambles and and they got, you know, Matthews and these guys. They just keep plugging in their receivers.
Bakari Grant's waiting in the wings now.
And they keep winning. Yeah. I mean, you're missing your top five receivers.
Yeah.
Or four.
Yeah.
Top four receivers at this point with Rodgers back.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's sort of like the Patriots where you can just keep plugging in these guys. But Patriots really had no one to start the season at receiver. I think Chris Hogan was their leading receiver. But, you know, you get Edelman back and.
Yeah. Things slowly roll.
It's just it's the system. I think they just have a great system and a good track record of developing these guys on the practice roster and bringing them up to speed and plugging them in.
Plugging them in. Okay, time now for a two-minute drill. So, Taylor Shire from Global Sports, if the Riders are to win today, what do they got to do? Are you going to follow the theme that we've heard throughout the whole show?
They got to score points on defense and win the game 10-9?
Can they? Okay, here's a better question for you. Can they? Do you see them mustering much of an offense today? Will it be better than the Winnipeg game, won't it?
They have to. Well, I mean, you can't really get worse than that. I mean, you could get worse than that. But you can't really get worse. They're going to get themselves in field goal range at least. They're not necessarily going to score three or four touchdowns or two or three touchdowns. But if they get themselves in field goal range, and maybe, you know, even kick six field goals, that still gives them 18, right? Like, so they have to at least score 20 points against Calgary in order to even have a chance. And if, you know, 7 or 10 points comes from the defense or just good field position or returns, gets them in field goal range, they have a chance. They're not going to punch it into the end zone four times.
No, they're not. Now, out-of-town scoreboard, by the way, the Montreal Alouettes lead the Argonauts 14-13 about midway through the third quarter, and Johnny Manziel has a touchdown pass in that game in the Who Cares game in the CFL. So, who do you got today and why?
The Riders' backs aren't up against the wall at this point, so I'm going to take Calgary at home. They're, you know, not going to lose back-to-back at home after losing to BC last week.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take Calgary, and they'll probably win by a touchdown, maybe 10 points.
I say Calgary by 10 as well. Yeah. I think our offense might show a little bit of life, but not enough. But if they don't turn the ball over, they're in good shape.
They'll be fine, but until their backs are against the wall and they need to win, it's, you know, I don't think they're forced to win this week. They need to win next week against BC, and that'll be a game where they'll really get jacked up, especially at home.
All right, the Rough Riders and the Stampeders straight ahead. We'll go to Calgary next with Rod Peterson and Luke Mulliner. I want to thank our sponsors here, KFC, Waxy's Bobcat, Mr. Lube for the hotline, and all our other sponsors on the broadcast. Taylor, thanks for coming in, man.
Thanks for having me.
So you're going to make supper tonight?
I guess I better.
What's on supper?
I might order pizza.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, you gotta take the easy way out. Tell the wife you're working here today. Yeah, that's exactly why. All right, when we come back, we'll have Rod and Luke in the booth, and we'll talk to you after the game. Thanks for listening.